When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everybody, welcome. It's another episode of Simply Amazing. Tim Ryder, Taryn Sharma. The Mets are not even above water right now. They're well below water, but hey, let's have a podcast anyway. What's going on, Taryn?
They're drowning, but they're still swimming. They finally won a series. How about that? It took a month.
But they exactly, like almost to the day.
And beat a banged up but had been hot Giants team, which is that's a good couple wins, and honestly, like their one eighth inning meltdown from sweeping that series, which is saying something.
It is, and you know, as down as things are right now, and as bleak as they look, you know, we've seen crazier things happen than a team make up eight games in the wild card in July. You know, safe to say that they're not catching the Braves in the East. But, you know, despite there being, one, two, three, four teams ahead of the Mets going into those top three wild card spots. Again, you know, we've seen crazier things happen, but let's be realistic at this moment. They've got a lot of work cut out ahead of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think that. Like the team doesn't understand that, right? Like, yeah. I think everyone's kind of on the same page of that they've dug a huge hole for themselves, and they're obviously not going to catch Atlanta. But you know, I think that they can at least play for pride at the very least, and maybe they surprise us in the second half. There's always these weird stories. And I know that we talked about Philly last time we were on here and how Philly had already started to climb out of that hole. You know, look, if the Mets somehow starting tonight, like turn it around and run off 10 of 12, one, I'll be shocked. But two, I think that, you know, that changes the entire dynamic. You go into the All-Star break with a little run and then come out of it with a little run. I mean, maybe you get hot. Maybe something happens. Who knows?
Oh, I wouldn't, you know, it's certainly not out of the realm of possibility, but, you know, it's going to be a game by game thing. I think the probability of them making any sort of waves is probably, you know, not nil, but it's on the lower end of that spectrum. Yeah. You know, for right now, like you said, playing for pride, which, you know, over the first half of the season, we really haven't seen a whole lot of resiliency. You know, big opposite from what we saw from this team last year. And, you know, trying to gauge the differences between last year's club and this year's, that'll be a whole episode to itself once the season's all done. But, you know, they've had bright spots. Look at what Tommy Pham's been doing. You know, you're starting to see, I guess you could say, an identity, and it's not a great identity to have, but you know, you have certain times and certain players in certain situations where there is encouragement, which, you know, I guess at the current juncture you're at, it's nice to see. But yeah, I mean, you string more series wins together, a couple of breaks happen, and yeah, things are a little bit different. But for right now, you know, you saw the Mets already starting to make moves on Monday. They traded Zach Muckenhern to the Seattle Mariners. Got back Chris Flexen and Trevor Gott. They DFA'd Flexen. They picked up his $4 million owed.
That's right.
$600,000 it's owed to Gott. The Mets picked up. So, you know, they're making minor moves. I'm very curious to see where DePoto's going with all this, clearing up two roster spots. But as far as the Mets, I mean, they got a bullpen piece. which, you know, probably about a month too late. But what are your thoughts on taking this step now? Like, are they preparing for more moves to be made? Is this just, oh, hey, we needed an extra bullpen arm, so we flipped Muckenherm for this guy?
Well, I think there's a few things here. The first and most obvious is, like, again, utilizing the resource advantage that the Mets have. They have a competitive advantage when it comes to an owner willing to take on money. So that would be the first thing, eating that flex and contract. And, you know, maybe now he's been DFA'd, he could be dealt again. Maybe you get a piece for him. Maybe he gets picked up and somebody else is on the hook for that money. But either way, the willingness, you know, Cohen in his press conference last week said that on all of these deals, he basically considers the money has already been spent. And so that's how he treats it. I think what you saw here is a good baseball decision in that Zach Muckenhern's fine. He's been pretty good at AAA, but those numbers, I think, probably aren't stable. He didn't necessarily flash at the major league level in his short term with the big league club. He's an interesting guy, lefty, and the first and last player from the University of North Dakota, because they cut their baseball program his senior year. And so there will be no more North Dakota baseball players, but kind of cool that he got to make his debut and become the first and the last. And then I think that Gott in particular is kind of evidencing what the track the Mets will take at this deadline and going forward. I don't think that they believe that this entire core is cooked and that there's no way that they could be competitive next year. I think that they're going to view this as like needing to retool. And in that sense, Gott is, he's got, you said it, $580,000 left on this year. He signed a 1 year, $1.2 million with the Mariners. And then he's ARB eligible next year. So the Mets will probably get him, I don't know, 1.5, something like that. So you build in another arm to next year's bullpen. It's kind of doing your winter work early, which I like to see. And his numbers have been pretty good this year. Sorry.
Decent.
Sorry.
I was just adding on. Very decent numbers. I mean, against righties, it's kind of like backward splits, but I'm sorry. Scratch that. Against righties, he's 211, 263, 254. That's outstanding. We'll take that.
Yeah. And you know, he's striking out almost 10 per nine. He's thrown about 30 innings, which is great. XERA is expected ERA is almost a run lower than what his ERA is. So you see his numbers and it's like, oh, he's got a four ERA. He's a reliever comes in and throws, you know, the three batter minimum. What are you really getting here? But if you dive in a little bit more, it looks like he should, if his luck kind of evens out, because right now he's dealing with 365 BABIP. I think that, you know, he's got pretty good chances of improving. You look at his profile, he gets a lot of whiffs on that four seam, and that has increased a lot year over year. He kind of throws the four seam and it's got some sinking action. So there's a little bit of trouble with categorization there, I think. But getting a significant number of swings and misses on the four seam this year. So yeah, it's good to see. I think it'll be a good addition and a guy that clearly they targeted. They liked something that they saw and made a deal.
I'm looking at a split here. Late and close this season for Gott. 216, 310, 270. He's not really impressive with two outs of runners in scoring position, runners in scoring position, period. Numbers aren't great, but late and close, which the Mets absolutely need that in their bullpen right now. He's been very solid. So, yeah, I hope that works out. You think Flexen makes it back to the minors, or he gets moved along?
Well, I wasn't sure. I saw some talk online. A lot of people were saying that his contract has a clause that prevents him from being able to be sent down, which I think is why they made the decision to DFA him. If he passes through waivers, you know, maybe he wants to come through on a minor league deal, and then he can join the much heralded Mets pitching lab that that Steve Cohen discussed in his talk last week. But otherwise, I'm not sure. Maybe it would be a piece for somebody else on a deal where he can be guaranteed that he'll be up in the majors.
Yeah, he'll probably have the option to just choose free agency once he clears waivers, right?
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. So yeah. And he didn't have all too nice things to say about the Mets organization when he left, but things have changed considerably since. I believe that was him, right? That was Flexen, wasn't it?
Oh, did he?
Oh, I want to say he left and he wasn't a happy camper, but I'm not 100% sure on that. And I'm sure if I searched for Flexen Mets right now, all I would find was trade news. So I'll have to look a little deeper into that. Go ahead.
Well, I don't want to change the topic completely, and maybe we should come back to this, but what did you make of JD Davis's comments? Because he not only grouped in the previous regime, but the current one as well.
Oh, you're going to have to fill me in, my friend. I worked all day and I had a little something going on after work. I did not catch JD Davis's comments. Please indulge me, sir.
Well, I think that there are a few things. So the first thing is that he said that there was a lot of instability. There were a lot of guys in the clubhouse that felt like they were on survival mode. He said that he was one of the few guys that if he hit a home run in his most recent season with the Mets, that he would not be able to play the next day. So looking at those, somebody did the numbers. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Repeat. If he hit a home run the previous day, he wasn't playing the next day?
He would not be in the lineup the next day. Yeah, he wouldn't be in the lineup the next day. Buck wouldn't put him in the lineup the next day. That's what he said. And so if you look at it, he hit four home runs, and three of those times he was not in the lineup the next day. But he also only hit four home runs. So, you know, there's a lot of different things that I think that go into a player playing well. Also, the Mets were, you know, chasing Atlanta, chasing the division last year, and they were looking for more of a spark. Darren Ruff had been good. They thought that he was going to be able to replicate that in New York. It obviously did not work out. That was a bad trade. But I don't think JD Davis performing well in San Francisco, which has done a good job of making the most out of its hitters under the Farhan Kapler kind of regime. I don't think that means that the Mets somehow screwed that up. I think that he got a change of scenery. He got an opportunity to play a lot on a team that was not contending for a division last year. And this year he's had a really good run for half of the season, and hopefully he'll keep it up. He also struck out with the bases loaded last night. So, you know.
I just pulled it up. It's Disha Thosar of Fox Sports, formerly of the New York Daily News, former friend of the pod. She's been on the pod. Disha's terrific. Yeah, I'm looking through this now, and boy, that is wild. I guess what he's been able to do in San Francisco this year, it seems like he's refreshed, rejuvenated, re-energized. He probably, you know, arguably could have had a shot at an all-star nod, right?
Yeah. And I mean, arguably he should have been because his numbers are great, but I don't think that like JD Davis succeeding in a way that, you know, he had with the Mets in 2019, he was really good that year. He had like a 20 plus home run season for the Mets.
Exit velocity through the roof. You know, BABIP that nobody said was sustainable, but he's held up that end of the equation pretty well.
Yeah, and so I think that the comments are interesting. He obviously knows a lot of the people in the on the current Mets roster, and said, okay, he was just there last year, and said that he sees a lot of these guys walking on eggshells. So, you know, I don't know. Like, I think that it's really easy to say that stuff when you leave, right? Mauricio Dubon, who was like fine for the Giants, but not like elite. And then went to Houston and got an opportunity to play a lot, and has had a really good first half. Then he also said like the Giants didn't treat him right. So everybody's just doing the wrong thing. Like, or is it possible that guys in different situations can make the most of a new opportunity, that they really enjoy where they're living, or that they really enjoy who they're playing with, and as a result, they can be better. They can get more opportunities. They can make the most of it. And that it's not necessary that you have to then say like, oh, my previous organization was doing the wrong thing because I wasn't able to continuously do this. Like, we saw JD Davis basically be what he is this year in 2019 for the Mets.
Yeah.
It's not necessary for him to cast that shade. And I understand, you know, the reporters are asking the questions. I think it's like, I don't know, there's nothing special to me about punching down when a team is obviously having a really bad run of it and has had a really poor season, whereas the Giants are, you know, surprisingly good. I just don't think that it's necessary. I don't think that the Mets did anything to wrong JD Davis, other than he wasn't making the most of his opportunities when he was here, and another team wanted him. They saw another piece that they thought was going to help them contend for a championship, and you know, they got that wrong. But that doesn't mean that they did wrong by JD Davis. They sent him into this good situation.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as far as Davis goes, and you could even probably lump Dubon into this, there's preconceived notions within the organization, and not like in anything besides how we want to use or utilize or how we see this player moving forward through his career on a trajectory type, you know, scene level. You know, JD Davis, as you said, and as everybody really saw, he had all the tools to be that guy. And did the Mets probably mess with him a little bit? Sure. Did they misuse him? Absolutely. Did they, I don't want to say mislead him, but it's almost like they weren't looking out for the best. I guess the most, excuse me, the most efficient, most effective JD Davis they could have had. It's almost like, I guess what I just read now, it's almost like they weren't, that wasn't really on their list of priorities. They just wanted, okay, JD Davis is going to be this person for this team, and we're just going to kind of, you know, pigeonhole you into this specific role. And clearly, I mean, there's so much more to his game, and he's shown it this year, but you got to think how often that stuff happens. You know, how often do we hear, oh, a change of scenery really helped this guy, or whatever, or look at Dubon and saying, hey, you know, they didn't use me correctly. They treated me wrong, whatever the case is. And you move on, and, you know, these guys are major league players for a reason. Sometimes all you need is just that comfort level, just that absence of pressure, just that absence of anxiety. And guys find the spots. Look at Davis. He's went to San Francisco. It's a laid back thing. It's a room for him to just do his thing and succeed. And he's doing it. Look at Dubon. You know, they needed him in Houston and said, hey, you're versatile enough and you can put the ball in play. And, you know, let's see if you can really, you know, push all these buttons at a time that we really need him. And he has. And I'm, you know, thrilled for him, thrilled for Davis. Going back and you know, it's not like he offered this stuff up. He was asked. But, you know, is it a kick in dirt kind of vibe to it? Maybe. It's also conceivable that JD Davis was, you know, could have been very upset with how he was treated here. And then, you know, I'm sure if the fans were excited about JD Davis and his promise and his potential future with the Mets, imagine how the player himself thought felt. And then things deteriorated. And now, you know, he's gone here. He's off to somewhere else. He's doing great. But you got to just wonder how often these things happen and you know, how different things could be if, all right, you know what? This isn't working. Let's cut bait. Let's move him along. And, or, hey, you know, this player's not working out there. Let's see if we can get him working here. And I guess that's the whole, you know, waiver wire, quote unquote, trash heap aspect of things. But in the same breath, like, that's sometimes that's all it takes. Just a new set of eyes, a fresh start for the player, for the org, or whatever. And, you know, things get unlocked, things happen, and guys take off. It's the beauty of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I also think that there's a big thing to player development, right? The Giants do a very good job with player development. There's a reason why in 2021, I don't think that any of those like guys that had big seasons are household names, right? Like you had Buster Posey, but it was the latter end of his career. It was his last season. You had
You look at Mike Yastrzemski, man. He made his major league debut at 28, 27.
Right. And basically like him, Darren Ruff, those are guys that they got off the, you know, and I don't mean it pejoratively, but like the trash heap. The things that Davis said in this interview, which is with The Athletic, so people want to read more of it, but the that being shuffled from first to third to the outfield, And that compromised his ability to do any one thing well. But that is what value is, right? Like if I can plug you in three different positions, which by the way, you're not particularly good defensively at any of them. and like, then you're more valuable to the team. So he has to understand that. That one seems like a silly criticism to me. And then this other one, which I want to get your thoughts on, he said, if you feel a sense of urgency in the front office as a player, you feel like you're going to be in survival mode. I think that we have spent our entire lives as Mets fans begging for a front office with urgency. And I think a lot of us would say that it probably weren't even urgent enough last year. Darren Ruff and Michael Givens doesn't exactly scream urgency to me. You know, maybe Baez did to a greater extent, but it's not like they kept him around. So do you think that that's like a fair criticism for him to level that, okay, the front office, if this is the case, is trying to get better, and they're eager to get better. Why is that a bad thing if you're a player?
No, I think, you know, I don't want to put myself in Davis's mind or twist his words, but I'm kind of curious as to why, as a player, your livelihood's at stake, and you're playing for a job pretty much, you know, on a game to game, week to week, month to month basis, if you're not an established player. But it almost makes you wonder, like, where's just the go out and do your job aspect and let the other stuff kind of fall into place. You know, we talked a bunch about expectations and pressure regarding the 2023 Mets. And I'm not going to say, oh, this is why they've been so tripped up, but it's certainly possible. I think anytime, and in any walk of life, if you start overthinking stuff, if you start worrying about things that are just out of, I guess, worrying outside of what you can control, you know, that's only going to be a detriment to what you're trying to accomplish. You know, if JD Davis is worrying about if the front office was, you know, aggressive enough or showing enough urgency or whatever, you know, it is what it is. That's what management does. You know, they're always looking to make things better, make things more efficient, you know, cut costs, whatever the case may be. You know, only way you're going to keep your status or keep your position is by going out and doing your job. So yeah, I'm kind of curious, I guess, where that kind of works into everything, but clearly he had some stuff on his mind. So, you know, let him say what he says. He's doing well now. I'm happy for him. But yeah, it all comes back to the Mets, though. Like, I think they're finding their way as a successful organization. They haven't really been a successful organization, at least for long periods of time and, you know, extended or consistently or whatever. Yeah, I think there's going to be bumps in the road. And I think 2023 was a major bump in the road. It's quite possible that Billy Epler was a bump in the road. And, you know, a president of baseball operations, just maybe some trial and error type stuff. But, you know, look at J.D. Davis. Was that a trial and error type situation for the Mets? Maybe. You know, you don't want to pigeonhole yourself or your players into one specific role, especially when, as it turns out, you know, this guy's got a wide array of value available for any club who could have really tapped into it. And yeah, I think it kind of all ties into each other. It's, you know, it's a crossroads point for the Mets, and it's, you know, seeing how things could have happened this year, seeing how things could still happen, wondering how this trade deadline might or can or potentially change the future. I mean, there's a lot of different aspects right here, but, you know, what they've done from, let's say, this point last year to the All-Star break this year, they could have set themselves back. And I don't want to get too far off track here, but, you know, it's all kind of hand in hand, step by step. Oh, well, if they would have done this, then this would have happened. Oh, if they would have done this, maybe this wouldn't have happened. You know, a lot of hypotheticals, I guess.
Yeah. And I don't think it's a foolproof thing that they could have predicted that it would happen the way that it's happened, that Starling Marte would completely fall off a cliff, that you know, they weren't going to get the production that they expected out of Jeff McNeil this year. Those things could still change, right? It's only half of a season, but it's half of a season. So should we take a break real quick? We'll talk a little bit about how the series went and tie that into what the trade deadline might look like. Now we're less than a month away.
Yeah. Yeah. We're the clock's ticking. Yeah. Let's take a quick one. We'll come right back. Hang tight.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510, is he declaring an emergency? There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
And we are back. So yeah, the Mets were able to win a series. They're heading out west to Arizona. Taryn, what have you seen from this team, and where do you think they're headed now?
The Diamondbacks? Well, they're really
good. No. The Mets. what they're coming off of, the team they're going to face, and what's ahead of them in the next month or so.
Yeah, it feels like it's kind of like the last hurrah here to see if they can get some momentum going. Like I mentioned, it's almost like, you know, imagine that in basketball, college basketball specifically, like if you had a terrible first 17 minutes of the first half, and then like you go on a little spurt that last 3 minutes, trim it maybe single digits or something like that, and you come out first few minutes of the second half and you have a really strong start. That's what the Mets desperately need. Who knows if that's possible? Getting another bullpen arm is helpful, I think. You know, they've had so much and rightfully so consternation over starting pitching. Well, if you look, like Scherzer had a pretty good start his last time out. They got a good start from David Peterson. Maybe that finally fills the fifth starter. Quintana's going to be back in a week or so, probably right after the All-Star break or maybe even before. Do we have time for him to come back before?
Not 100%.
Yeah. Well, but soon anyway. And yeah, Tommy Pham is hitting the ball really well. Maybe Pete starts to get going. Weird play for McNeil where he was able to knock two in last night. So maybe these things start building on each other. Who knows? And the good news is that we have a month to kind of find out. Things that did stand out to me in this series, Tommy Pham continuing to hit the ball really well. I think he's going to net us like a pretty solid prospect back, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
If Mark Hanna keeps on hitting, I think he could do the same.
He was the other one that I was going to bring up because he has shown that he still has that pop a little bit, that the home run that he had in the Sunday night game in particular looked good. I think maybe so. The buyout on his deal next year is $2 million. I could see the Mets maybe paying, like sending Canna and $2 million over to a team and seeing if you could get like a solid top 10 kind of prospect for a system, not overall.
No, I'm probably thinking more of top 20, but sure. As long as you get projectable arms, which this, you know, this organization is just absolutely searching for at this point, at least healthy ones. You have some potential prospects, but fill out the depth of the pitching and take it from there. I mean, at least you can get something out of this season if it's not going to be a winning season.
Right. That's just where they're at right now. Were there any pitchers that you saw that could be an option for sending out? Maybe Ottavino, if he can have like a couple good start or a couple good outings before the deadline?
Well, you would hope so. He hasn't been as consistent as he was last year, and I'm sure that's going to affect whatever value he might have on the trade market. If he's sticking around, and David Robertson, I believe he's only on that 1 year deal, and he's been traded, I think, like six or seven times in his career, and still is effective as ever. I would probably expect them to move him before Ottavino and just slide Ottavino into that ninth inning role and hope for the best. It certainly puts the question in the Mets' mind, or it should. And I'm sure in the interested teams' minds, because everyone always needs back end bullpen help. But I would kind of expect Robertson to go before Ottavino, at least interest wise from possible other teams. I like what Raley's been able to do in recent games. He's been efficient. He's been consistent. Maybe you look into. I don't want to start shifting around McGill or Peterson, but hey, if someone needs a viable start, you really can't put not for sale on any one of these players if you're going into the trade market. And of course, there are untouchables. We talked about them last week, but who else could you really move at this point?
I think Raley is a really attractive target for people. Maybe you package a couple of those guys and see if you can get an even higher level prospect. But Raley, really affordable. He's got 4.5 this year, and then he's got a club option for 6.5 next year. So that deal looks pretty good.
Dominic Leon was Mets traded for him after he was put on waivers, right?
I thought they just signed him.
That was just a signing?
Yeah.
All right. Either way, if you can move him, he's been decent. If you can move him for somebody, that's something too.
Yeah. Yeah. All of those guys, because you know that the bullpen has to be completely rebuilt. And so I think rather than just give Gott, Hartwig, McFarland, Brigham, although he's been really rough of late.
Brigham's kind of lost that luster a bit.
Just give them all the opportunities, see if you can get one decent reliever out of that bunch and then know what you're going into next year with, because that is an area where beyond Diaz coming back, there is a lot of work that needs to be done. You just can't be in a situation where, you know, you have this level of payroll and then I'm begging for Dominic Leon to get through the seventh inning. It's just like, it's frustrating to watch. And I'm sure it must be frustrating for Steve as well. So, yeah, that I think is an area where the president of baseball ops, David Stearns, will focus on heavily.
If they do start chipping off guys and, you know, you're sticking Beatty, Alvarez, Vientos, call up Ronnie, they're all going to be in the mix for the remainder of the season, right? If it's up to you.
They have to. You have to know what you have. Like, it's crazy to me right now that Vientos is not up. Like, he might not be good. He might just be a guy. But I think that you need to give him a little bit of a longer run to know whether that's the case or not. I don't even think at this point you're like preserving his trade value by keeping him at Syracuse. I think that he's like, you need to see whether, unless they've completely written him off already as being part of the future core.
I don't know. I mean, not with exit velocities like that. You know, a little bit of seasoning, a little bit of experience, a little bit of seeing major league pitching on a consistent level, I think he's going to be fine. I think he's got the power profile to be fine. And, you know, the only way that the Mets are ever going to learn is, or you know, ever going to see what they actually have in Mark Vientos or anybody. You, I mean, look at the strides that Alvarez and Beatty have taken in. I mean, Beatty, he looks like a comfortable young hitter right now. Alvarez, I mean, just this past weekend, he was really, really looking quite strong. But the type of the ilk of players that Vientos is, that Ronnie Mauricio is going to be, getting them experience now over this second half of mostly a lost season. And who knows, maybe they get a spark and maybe they make a run, and maybe in September they're four games out of the wild card and they make a push. And maybe it's because of the energy of a young infusion, whatever the case may be. It ain't over till it's over. Wise man named Yogi Berra once said that. they've got a lot of decisions to make in a month left to really do anything considerable to what they're trying. Well, anything substantial to trying to move the needle, I guess.
Yeah. I think even more than, you know, look at them getting comfortable, it's like, look at them being uncomfortable at this level. You got to fail at this to get better. There are very few guys that have ever come up and been instantly good and good their entire careers. And those guys go in the Hall of Fame. But to be like a good all-star level player too, you got to come up and you got to fail a little bit. So you'll come up, you do however you do, the league will adjust to you, you'll fail, you'll come back, you'll work on things, you'll improve the things that you do well. That's baseball. Like, there, Terry Collins always said that there are two types of people in this game, those who are humbled and those who will be. And so I think that that's the case for these young guys, and that's what I'm hoping to see the rest of the season. Anything else before we get out of here, Tim?
I think that's it, man. You nailed it. That was the soliloquy for that was an Independence Day soliloquy. Everybody, we'll see you guys next time. I believe Andrew's off next weekend for his wedding. Congratulations, Andrew. So we'll be back after that. Until then, let's fucking go, Mets. We'll see you guys next time.
Peace.